For the week of December 12th, 2010, this is Showbiz Sandbox Episode 83, the podcast that brings you all the dirt on the news making headlines around the entertainment world. In Los Angeles, I'm Jay Sperling Reich.
And in Los Angeles, I'm Karen Woodward.
And in New York, listening to last week's podcast on my BlackBerry, I'm Michael Gills.
Yes, I discovered this week that we were featured or highlighted on the BlackBerry podcast app, which explains why our numbers skyrocketed so much and why we got an influx of mail.
But I just downloaded it and I can't figure out how it works.
Well, yes, both Karen and I are still on BlackBerry, so we're a little out of it. And I know, Michael, you're on an iPhone.
No, absolutely not. That doesn't mean we're out of it. I have an iPad.
Good point. And there's no way we're out of it because we keep up with all of the entertainment news so that we can digest it, analyze it, review it, and let our listeners know what happened each week. And in an hour, we can go over an entire week's worth of news. And in fact, on today's show, we have a ton of inside baseball news. But first, we'll continue a rundown of the movies the critics are selecting as the top movies of the year in their annual best of picks. The MPAA came to its senses and revised the NC-17 rating for Blue Valentine. In music news, Susan Boyle is schooling Kanye West with her new album, and the Gorillaz have a special holiday present for their fans. We have a bit of an update on the launch of Spotify in the U.S., and it's not much of an update, but we'll go over it. We'll also tell you how some musicians are making millions of dollars on YouTube, and which reality TV stars are earning similar salaries this year. And it wouldn't be a show if we didn't mention Netflix at least once or twice. Of course, we'll cover all the big showbiz news stories during Big Deal or Big Whoop. But first, as always, we turn it over to entertainment journalist extraordinaire Michael Gilts to fill us in on the weekend's box office figures.
And the number one movie at the box office was The Chronicles of Narnia, The Voyage of the Dawn Treader, a Fox film which opened at $24.5 million, about half of what the last Narnia film opened at, and a third of what the first Narnia film opened at. So this is a series heading into the dustbin. At number two is The Tourist, the Johnny Depp Angelina Jolie film, which opened pretty weakly at $17 million, given the two stars involved. And number three is the Disney film Tangled, which is doing gangbusters business, did another $14.5 million. It's grossed $115 million in the U.S. so far. And number four is Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 1, or HP7P1, of course, as we should call it. That's at $257 million in the U.S. and about, well, how much is it now? About $800 million worldwide, getting close to that right now. It's over $700 million. And number five is Unstoppable, the Denzel Washington, Chris Pine action film. That's at $75 million total. And at number six, perhaps the biggest news of the week, Black Swan, which is only on 90 screens, but it grossed $3.3 million for an excellent $37,000 per screen average. It's also getting on a lot of the end of the year best 10 lists. So that film is in a good position to platform wide and make back its $13 million budget. At number seven is the Cher Christina Aguilera film Burlesque. That's at $32 million total. And number eight is the Jake Gyllenhaal Anne Hathaway film Love and Other Drugs. That's at $27 million total. And number nine is Due Date, the Zach Galifianakis Robert Downey Jr. comedy. That's almost hitting $100 million at $94 million total. And at number 10, the animated film Megamind, which is at $140 million in the U.S. So it was off about 5% from the same weekend last year. And the soft opening of Narnia is probably the worst news, and the good legs for Tangled is probably the best news.
Yeah, but I don't think that that Angelina Jolie and Johnny Depp's people are real excited about these numbers.
Did either of you see it? I didn't see any movie this weekend.
No, I didn't see any movie this weekend either. I was hanging with my dad. I went to the symphony.
Ooh, what did they perform?
Tchaikovsky and something else.
Was it at the Disney Hall, that space?
It was my first time there. It's an incredible building. I thought I was going to be really bored by this, but I have to admit, I wasn't. I don't think I would go back again, but
ever?
The symphony is not as boring as you'd think.
Ever? You'd never go to the symphony again?
Under special circumstances, I might, but I wouldn't just for fun, no.
Let me translate that for you. With the right guy, she would, but she wouldn't go by herself.
That's true. Yep. The right guy would. And if that right guy happens to be my dad, then I'll go.
What about you, Sperling? Did you see anything this weekend?
Well, it's the end of the year. So it's that time of year when I start catching up on movies, thanks to all the screeners. And what did I see? I saw a really old movie, A Single Man, the Tom Ford movie, which was released last year, starring Colin Firth. That was really good. Very well done. What else did I see? Iron Man 2, finally. I caught up on that. Did you guys see that film?
What member of the Academy are you? What section that you get screeners?
Oh, if I told you, I'd have to.
Kill me? Okay.
No, I mean, it's one of those screener swaps, so.
Oh, I see. Never mind. I withdraw the question.
I still haven't seen Iron Man 2.
I finally saw it.
It's okay.
I hated it. I really, really hated it.
I spent the weekend on Broadway. I saw the final performance of the Scottsboro Boys, a terrific new musical by Kander and Ebb, the guys who did Cabaret in Chicago. It closed pretty early, about 6 weeks after it opened. It's a shame. It's the best musical on Broadway right now. It's the first time I've ever been at a show, an open-ended run, when it was the final performance of the musical. So it was pretty, exciting. It was my second time seeing the show. The cast was crying on stage. They did a toast to Fred Ebb, the late Fred Ebb. It was a really special night at the theater.
So when you saw Night and Day, was it a special night?
Well, Night and Day is the Tom Cruise movie, which I believe we said from the get-go, you know, shut up about how it's doing in the U.S., wait till we see the worldwide grosses. And in fact, Night and Day, the Tom Cruise, Cameron Diaz action film, is the number one grossing movie for 20th Century Fox worldwide that was released in 2010. Their top grossing movie of the year is, in fact, Avatar. It grossed about $400 million worldwide in 2010, if not more. But Night and Day is their best release that came out originally in 2010. Still not great. It's $262 million worldwide. It wasn't a flop. Tom Cruise will get you your money back no matter what. Obviously, he won a big payday, but he did his job. He got people in the seats.
Yeah, that was a movie I saw over the weekend as well.
And?
It wasn't horrible, but it was kind of very pedestrian. It went through the motions.
My dad watched it on Netflix because that's what I get him every year. It's like, well, I saw that Day and Night movie with Tom Cruise. Man, what a dog.
that Cameron Diaz is quite a looker, though.
Oh, he has no idea who Cameron Diaz is. None whatsoever.
my dad always says, oh, Nicole Kidman is really talented.
I'm sure you think so, Dad.
My dad went to see a musical because of her. Well, you know, the fact that Night and Day is their top movie is more a reflection of what a bad year Fox had. Though they did have more market share than Sony Pictures or Universal, they're below Warner Brothers, Paramount, and Disney. Universal had a bad year. Despicable Me is their only real hit. After that, it's Robin Hood and then a lot of junk.
See a lot of junk. Was it good?
A lot of junk was not bad. Same thing with Sony Pictures. The one or two big hit was The Karate Kid, that movie. They made a lot of cheap movies that made good amount of money. The Karate Kid, Grown Ups, the Adam Sandler film, The Other Guys, which didn't translate overseas, like we said, because Will Ferrell just doesn't have an international audience. But, you know, they all made money, and now they have The Social Network, which only cost them $40 million. It's made $180 million worldwide, and it is clearly the front runner for the Oscars.
Yeah, I mean, again, Los Angeles Film Critics Association, Best Picture of the Year. I think it also won Best Director and Best Screenwriting.
And Best Actor, I think it won, too.
No, not for Best Screenplay. Are we talking the New York films?
No, he started with the L.A.
Oh, the L.A. Film Critics.
Yeah, does it matter which Film Critics Society we're talking about? They all pick the Social Network.
No, it doesn't really. It doesn't?
No.
Well, they all blur. They tend to have they used to have more of a regional bias. You would find New York Film Critics Association championing the indie film industry in New York. LA would sort of lean towards LA stuff. And of course, you've got Boston Film Critics in Chicago, et cetera. This year, it's looking like a real sweep. LA, New York, and Boston all named The Social Network the number one film of the year. Almost everybody's naming Colin Firth Best Actor. And there's also a lot of growing support in smaller categories among smaller critic groups for movies like The Kids Are All Right, The King's Speech, maybe a little bit for acting awards for The Fighter, the Mark Wahlberg film. You're seeing Melissa Leo and Christian Bale in a lot of awards. But there's a very strong consensus this year that The Social Network is the film to beat.
And I think once everybody sees The Fighter, I mean, coming out of that film, everybody says the same thing. Well, Christian Bale's going to win an Oscar for that role.
Well, I didn't say that. I didn't like the film very much. If anyone stuck in my mind, it was Melissa Leo, but I really wouldn't nominate anyone because I didn't like the film enough. But they're fine performances. It's just not a very interesting film.
It's very kind of paint by numbers in a way.
Yeah, it's just a very routine rock. You're kind of watching the movie waiting for something different to happen, or you're waiting for David Fincher to present this familiar material about a coming from behind scrappy boxer in some new way. And except for like one or two flourishes at the very beginning, he does nothing with the material.
I wasn't waiting for David Fincher to do that at all during that movie because David O. Russell directed it.
Oh, David Fincher, of course, did The Social Network. David O. Russell did The Fighter. And he's known for some dramatic, flashy work.
The Three Kings, I Heart Huckabees.
And in the other movie news, of course, Blue Valentine, which comes out December 31st. And I was very disappointed to see Ryan Gosling and Michelle Williams in the film itself not making more headway in the acting categories. But that movie did get its ratings overturned by the MPAA. It will now be rated R. So Harvey Weinstein did triumph in that, thank goodness. And it's coming out December 31st, one of the best films of the year, and everyone should check it out, even if you want to bring your teenage kid.
Well, now you can bring your teenage kid.
That's right. You couldn't do an NC-17? Are you not allowed even with a parent?
Not with a parent. No children under 17. That's what that...
At all? Not even with a parent?
Not even with a parent. No children under 17. NC-17, yeah. I was reading different posts and listening to people pontificate on the Oscar chances if it had an NC-17 rating. And it's not necessarily going to hurt Blue Valentine's Oscar chances or opportunity during the awards season, but it will certainly hurt it financially if it got an NC-17 and if that NC-17 stuck, because many newspapers and television stations will not advertise an NC-17 film, and some theater chains won't play an NC-17 movie.
A lot of them won't. And of course, you can't advertise on TV, but only after 10 p.m., I think, is the standard. Maybe there's some stations that won't carry an ad, but most of them will after 10 p.m., and it just limits your audience. But happily, that story is over. It's an R, and everybody should go see it, anybody who likes serious adult drama.
Yeah, I mean, Harvey Weinstein is getting a lot of credit here for, quote-unquote, milking the controversy to not only promote his film, but to
smart.
Put, yeah, he put pressure on the MPAA. Many people, you know, many pundits, entertainment pundits, not that I'm putting them down since we are technically entertainment pundits, but they are claiming that Harvey Weinstein had a temper tantrum with the MPAA and they over...
Well, but he may have, but I thought his point was a good one, actually.
Oh,
I mean, I haven't seen that part of the film. I mean, I hear it's a pretty graphic oral sex scene, so I mean, obviously I couldn't say for sure, but we're such a prudish society that it sort of irritates me that something like that will give a movie an NC-17, but some of the really graphic violence and gore that we have to see, it's, you know, the movie is like a PG-13.
Yeah, I mean, it's an age-old argument and debate, which we're certainly not going to settle here. But if that sex scene is graphic, then anybody moaning in a sexual way would have to get an NC-17. That is the least graphical sex scene I've ever seen.
Really?
Well, yeah. You just focus on her face, basically. And as others point out, Black Swan got an R with a similar scene of implied oral pleasure, that one between two women. But because it was a disturbing, upsetting scene, in fact, we're not even sure if our heroine is hallucinating, and it sort of has a lascivious, dark undertone, and it's sort of unpleasant in a way, that got an R.
Because probably there are a lot of men who sit on the MCAA board.
Right. But this movie, with a couple married, and the woman is... simply enjoying herself, and it's an intimate, happy moment, that somehow got an NC-17. They're very similar scenes in a way, but one is dark and unpleasant with lesbians, two women having sex, not lesbians, I shouldn't say that. Two women having sex, that gets an R, but a happy scene of a woman getting pleasure from her husband, that gets an NC-17. And in neither one of them do you see anything explicit.
Hold on, guys. Just go on without me. I'm making a note to go see Black Swan. Just
exactly.
But, you know, guys that I've talked to are like, yeah, did you hear about that really graphic oral sex scene in it? I'm totally going to see that movie.
I think a lot of people are doing the same thing for Love and Other Drugs because Anne Hathaway effectively runs around the movie without her clothes on.
Yeah, but you don't have to see the movie to see the pictures. They're all over the internet.
Really? What did you search for? Oh, we can talk about that afterwards. But Michael, your favorite group to beat up on, the Parents Television Council.
I wouldn't say they're my favorite group to beat up on.
Oh, there are there others?
Quite possibly mine, though.
Oh, okay. Well,
no, I can't stand them.
They have really come out against this change in ratings, and they said the inherent flaws of the MPAA rating system were put on full frontal display this week with Blue Valentine. Did they really have to use full frontal? Come on. Ostensibly, because the producers of the film would not earn as much money at the box office with an accurate rating, the MPAA buckled under intense pressure and lowered the age rating of the film. Now, this would actually be okay if they'd actually seen the movie.
No, they don't. They don't need to see the movie to comment on a rating system and a perceived pressure from a producer. The problem is that they're a group with a very small base. They maybe have 10 or 12,000 people who subscribe to them and donate money, and they don't deserve any attention that they get. They get attention far outweighing their importance. And so I'm sorry that we even mentioned it. They're just put out a press release. They're just trying to piggyback on the movie to gain attention and raise funds for themselves.
Well, last year, The Social Network was on the blacklist, which is a list of the best unproduced screenplays of the year as voted on by people within the industry, executives and producers. And Leonard Franklin over at Universal Pictures puts the list together and puts the survey together. This year, what made the
Actually,
list, Michael?
Didn't he recently leave Universal?
I don't know. I saw him just...
Yeah, he recently left. I can't remember where he went.
Okay, I'll have to keep up with...
Tell him I said hi.
I certainly will. Hey, Michael, what was selected this year?
Well, I mean, some titles stay on the year list year after year, don't they? Depending on how hot they are and how much people admire them.
Yeah.
But this year, I'm not sure if the list is weighted, but at the top of the list is a screenplay called College Republicans. It's by Wes Jones, and it says, based on true events, aspiring politician Karl Rove runs a dirty campaign for National College Republican chairman under the guidance of Lee Atwater, his campaign manager. And this is a true story that I'd heard about. And I have to say, when I heard about how they ran a dirty politics campaign in college, I thought, oh, my God, that's a movie. And apparently somebody else agrees. It's a great screenplay. And you get other great screenplays like Jackie, which is about Jackie Kennedy fighting to define her husband's legacy in the 7 days after the assassination. Stoker by Wentworth Miller, who wrote Capote, that terrific movie.
Wentworth Miller is the actor from Prison Break.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
I know, it's even better.
Oh my God, I thought that was, I was reading the other name. Yeah, Wentworth Miller is the actor from Prison Break, and he has a screenplay, and it's an intimate story about after the death of her family, a teenager must deal with a mysterious uncle who returns to spend time with the family. So I'm not sure if Stoker is a reference to Bram Stoker Dracula or a reference to a guy who puts coal in a shuttle or what's going on there. But
Someone
you can go through that and find, we'll have a list there. A lot of interesting movies. Some of them you can understand why they weren't made. The Last Son of Isaac LeMay by Greg Johnson. It's about an aging outlaw who's convinced that there is evil in his genes and decides to go on a journey to kill off his children. In the process, he discovers that his last remaining son is a terrifying manifestation of his worst fears. So you watch a movie about a guy gunning down his kids. I love it.
That's like most movies these days.
Yeah, exactly. Disney, come on. CGI, 3D, it's perfect.
Awesome.
You know, I've tried to get Leonard Franklin on the show to talk about The Blacklist, and he really doesn't want to talk about it in the press, unless I guess you're The Business over at KCRW, a great show with Kim Masters, but he did actually talk about it a couple weeks ago on The Business. I'll give him a call again and see what we can arrange, but I'm not promising anything. Kind of like Spotify. They're not promising anything either. In fact, Daniel Ek, who is the CEO of Spotify, was attending the D-Dive Into Mobile conference, and he declined to comment on the U.S. launch of his company. Now, do you guys know what Spotify is?
Oh, yeah.
Explain it again.
Okay, well, Spotify is a service that you can subscribe to. It's kind of like Pandora in a way. It's like Last.fm, Pandora, Grooveshark, all mixed into one. And you can just type in the name of an artist and there are all their songs, and you can just play them one by one. You can do it on your computer, or you can do it on your mobile device.
And it's streaming, so you don't own a particular song. You subscribe to Spotify.
Correct. And I think it's $10 or 10 euro a month or 9 euro a month. I can't remember how much it is. I tried it when I was in Europe, and it is really pretty awesome.
And they do have a free version, which is how they get a lot of people to sample it. And you basically listen to music and then you hear ads every like 3.5 songs or something like that. So it's sort of like radio that you control and then you get ads every few minutes, or you can pay up and pay $10 a month and have access to it without getting the ads.
Right. And it was started in Europe, and I think it was started in Sweden, I want to say. And it's in the Netherlands. And the UK and France and certain European countries where the licensing has been worked out, but the licensing has not been worked out in the US. And it doesn't look as if Spotify is going to launch here in the US this year. They were hoping to launch it in the first quarter of 2010. Now, I guess their hope is the first quarter of 2011. And the reason being is that the record companies, the record labels, are bickering over the licensing and negotiation problems of the free side of this service.
But what's the deal? Are we not seeing record labels making money off Spotify in Europe? I mean, because if they're making money and it was working well, you would think the record labels in the US would be eager. Are they ignoring a good business, or are they spotting something that's cannibalizing sales?
I think they feel it's cannibalizing sales.
Yeah.
Do you guys use Last.fm or
no.
Pandora?
I use Pandora.
I have tons of CDs, and I just play my own music. I don't need to bother with other people.
Well, Pandora is great for like when you're working. You just want to have something on in the background, which is primarily how I do use Pandora. I like the idea of like, well, what am I in the mood for? You know, 80s love songs or whatever. And you just type that in and then you just listen to 80s love songs the rest of the afternoon.
Well, yeah. And you ask Michael whether the record companies are losing any money. Turns out Spotify in March of this year had 320,000 paying subscribers.
That's nothing.
Right. But imagine this. In December of this year, they have 750,000 paying subscribers. So imagine having a 100% growth rate in 1 year.
But that's in Europe? That's
just in Europe. And well, in like four or five countries.
Haven't they been around for ages?
No, they've been around for about 2 years.
I still think 750,000 is pretty lame for a market size that's equal to the U.S.
That's pretty low. I mean, I would think what Last FM is probably double that, triple that maybe.
I don't know.
But, you know, for all these music services, Michael, the numbers are smaller than you'd think.
Yeah. I mean, like Rhapsody is a service here in the United States that would be similar to Spotify, except they don't have every single song.
And I don't see any reason for the record labels to be rushing into it because it's not drawing that much people where it is already. So, you know, why rush in to offer everything you have for free or, you know, for $10 a month?
Yeah, I agree. I'm pretty happy with Pandora and Slacker. And for what I use it for, it's really all I need.
Well, Karen, do you watch music videos on YouTube? Do you go to YouTube sometimes to watch a particular song or see a video?
The only time I ever do is if someone's talking about it.
Right. Same here.
Yeah, and it's usually not something that is current, oddly enough. It's usually because somebody brought up something. Remember on MTV when they used to play videos and there was that really cool video and you're like, oh my God, I've got to go look at Great White's Once Bitten again.
Hold on, I'm just crossing that off my list. I really don't want to see. But if I did go and watch Great White's Once Bitten, they could actually make some money. There was a story on GigaOM this week about a new service based in Ohio called MyYouTube, and that's MYUT2B.com. And they monitor and keep track of 13,000 YouTube channels complete with daily revenue estimates.
Yeah, but it's only like the top 13, right? So,
well, yeah.
Great White's Once Bitten is probably not one of those.
Well, that's true. You know who is on the top? Guess who's on the top?
It's like Rihanna and...
Yep.
Rihanna, Justin Bieber.
Yep. Rihanna is currently the top earner. 4 million daily video views that translate to roughly $3,300 of revenue per day, which would equate to $1.2 million per year.
But I didn't really find anything about that site particularly fascinating.
Oh, I found it incredibly fascinating. I mean, you can drill down into each little statistic there and find out what videos for which particular channel are being watched, how many times, what they're earning. Now,
but
mind you.
Yeah. I couldn't find that.
Yeah, you just have to click on it. Click
I'm
on actually, each entry.
But I'm much more interested in the qualitative aspect of measurement on social media, so this kind of thing was a little bit too quantitative for me. But
right. Hold on. I'm just going to pull up the Oxford English Dictionary here. And
quantitative has to do with numbers, whereas qualitative has to do with like sentiment, people's opinions, and what they're actually saying.
And you prefer the sentiment over the...
For the qualitative, yeah. Maybe that's just the girl in me.
And what about you, Michael?
Well, it's a new chart. It's some information. It provides an insight into stuff that's hot on YouTube, not just music. You can also find it like number 9 in the current listing for top views is barely political and Real Annoy in orange. I mean, there's all sorts of things, not just, you know, music videos, though obviously they dominate a lot of it, Lady Gaga, Michael Jackson. But then you get Hollywood Streams, Machinima, College Humor, which my friend's kid watches all the time. So you can see that who's making money on what. So if you can search for any name that you want and see where they fall on this chart, because they have hundreds, if not thousands, of names listed here and their daily views and stuff. So it's another little bit of information.
Yeah, I mean, Eminem and Justin Bieber are making $1 million a day.
No, a year.
Yeah, I'll go with a year since that's what they're making.
That's the correct number.
But yeah. The fascinating thing about that is in the past, you had your music videos and they tried to package them and sell them on DVD and VHS. It didn't really work. And people bought some of them, but most didn't really sell. They were shown on MTV for free, and then they just went into the ether. And now they're actually making money off of them. You know, they used to spend 6 figures, 7 figures to make music videos, and it was all to promote the album. Now they're actually making a little bit of money, at least something, off the music video themselves.
Right, and the artist, remember, has to pay for most of that music video.
It depends on their deal, but sure.
Yeah.
But nowadays, yeah, as the artist.
Well, and you have to take these numbers that are being published here by myyoutube.com with a grain of salt, because really they're just an estimated earning, because they don't know the CPM that YouTube is selling the ads at.
Right. So they're not getting the figures straight from the accounting books. They're just estimating.
So yeah, it's yet another chart. You know what I think? Rather than start a new chart that measures the something having to do with media content, I'm going to start a chart of charts.
That's a good idea, actually. I pay attention to that.
What do you think, Michael?
Go for it.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know. I can tell I'm not. You're not really enthusiastic about that. But were you happy that Netflix wound up getting some new content from our friends over at Disney, ABC, the Disney Channel, and ABC Family?
Right. Finally, I'll be able to watch Greek on Netflix.
Greek.
Yay!
It's an ABC Family show.
I know.
I watched it on Hulu, though.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
So what does this deal mean? And Netflix keeps paying out big bucks to lock up programming for its streaming availability.
Yeah, I mean, at one point they were saying, oh, we're going to pay, you know, up to $100,000 per new episode of television that we can stream direct to our customers. But, you know, in syndication, those shows make much more money.
Do you think they're getting them for a bargain, or what did they pay for this latest deal?
Well, there are no actual figures yet, but it's around $150 to $200 million that Netflix paid to Disney in this licensing agreement.
And which only lasts 1 year.
It only lasts 1 year. That's what's remarkable. And we should also say that the ABC primetime shows will not actually be there. You will only get prior seasons. So if you want to watch Lost, you're in. You're doing good. But if you want to watch, I don't know, what's on Grey's Anatomy. Then you're not. The cable network shows, however, will be available no earlier than 15 days after the premiere of the show on cable to avoid problems with the, you know, pay TV distributors and whatnot.
Blah, blah, blah. They've got lots of different windows depending on whether it's pay cable, basic cable, primetime television, etc.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean,
it's like a big deal to me.
Was that your way of transitioning us into our popular segment, Big Deal or Big Whoop?
It was. At first, I wanted to talk about Netflix, and I realized it's not really that much of a story. So,
no, they just made another deal.
They made another deal, but let's face it. Do you guys have RSS readers that you keep up with? Yeah. And how many times do you don't, Michael?
No.
I check mine in the morning, and I check it at lunch, and I check it from my iPad in bed at night.
Wow, hold on. I'm just getting that mental picture of Karen in bed with her RSS reader. Now, how many times when you're checking your RSS reader does Netflix come up?
Pretty often. It's either like Netflix or Hulu. One of the two of them has always made some kind of a new deal.
Yeah, or, you know, the studios or the networks or somebody is talking about how Netflix is the new giant to kill, or, you know, the studios and networks are worried about Netflix, and how are the studios and networks going to deal with Netflix, and where's the Netflix competitor? Or so Netflix is sucking up ink, like, I have no analogy here, but like something. And it's sucking up virtual ink because everybody on the internet is talking about them.
Well, but it's an interesting story because it's an unanswerable story. And that's why everybody likes to talk about it.
Yeah. And you know what? Everybody was talking about some of the stories in our Big Deal or Big Whoop section this week. Of course, Big Deal or Big Whoop is our weekly segment where we review the top entertainment news stories of the week and whether they are a big deal or if anyone should care about them. Our first story is a pretty big one. Howard Stern isn't going anywhere. To no one's surprise, the shock jock Supreme re-signed with Sirius Satellite Radio for what outsiders estimate might be as much as $400 million for the next 5 years. Add that to the $500 million he made in his first 5 years at Sirius, and Stern is turning into the billion-dollar man. He also insists that the next 5 years will be his last after what will be 40 years on the air. So, Karen, is Stern announcing his retirement in 2015 a big deal or a big whoop?
I think it's a big whoop. It's a good play on his part, and he's made a lot of pretty good choices in his career, and this just happens to be one of them.
Michael?
I think it's a big whoop because I'll buy it when I see it. Even though he's been in the business 40 years, people just don't walk away. It's very hard to do.
Maybe he'll get into philanthropy.
I'm just surprised that somebody's willing to pay him $400 million. I mean,
that's an awful lot of money. Where's that coming from?
Yeah, I used to listen to him. It was the 80s. I don't find him that relevant anymore.
I don't either.
Susan Boyle kicks Kanye West to the curb. The The Singing Spinsters holiday CD leaped back to the top of the charts, knocking the critically acclaimed CD by Kanye West way down to number 7 after its number 1 debut. Taylor Swift is at number 2. But the real shocker this week was the miserable debut of the new album by Michael Giltz's favorite band, Black Eyed Peas. Their follow-up to the worldwide smash The End, which sold 11 million copies worldwide, could only muster up 119,000 sales and debuted at a terrible number 6.
Ouch.
Michael, is the awful opening for Black Eyed Peas a big deal or a big whoop?
It's definitely a big deal because this was supposed to be one of the blockbuster albums of the Christmas holiday season. So this is a real disaster in the making.
But you're kind of happy to see that for you know, this group that's so talented.
I don't wish them ill. I just don't want to hear their music.
What about you, Karen?
I agree for the same reason. Oof. Wow. Failure.
A
hit song can always turn
into fail.
Black Eyed Peas fail.
Yeah, they are one of the few album-selling artists of the last few years, along with Taylor Swift and others. 11 million copies is big numbers in any era. And so for them to flop this big coming out of the gate is bad. But, you know, a hit single or two could turn it around, I suppose.
Well, this next band is probably going to sell a lot of records since they're giving them away. The British pop band Gorillaz won't try to set any sales records with their new album. The Damon Albarn supergroup is giving away its new album on Christmas Day via digital download. It's a thank you to fans from a band who is seeing its current album, Plastic Beach, appear on a lot of lists covering the best albums of the year. The giveaway album has been dubbed the quote-unquote iPad album because Albarn created the whole thing on his iPad as a diary of his U.S. tour. Karen, is Gorillaz giving away its new album a big deal or a big whoop?
It would have been a big deal a couple of years ago, but now it just feels like a big whoop to me.
Michael?
I know what she means. It's a great thing for the fans, but it's a smart promotional move for him, assuming it's not an album that he pegs to be a worldwide smash. But it's sort of old news now, which is kind of amazing. A major act gives away its album and nobody blinks an eye.
I would have to disagree. I think it's a big deal because not only is that major act giving away their album, but they made the album on an iPad.
Yeah, but we talked about that last week, didn't we?
That's
a couple
cool.
weeks ago, yeah. Well, and
so
he,
that's already 2 weeks old.
Right. Well, and he wanted to release it on Christmas Day because he was afraid that if he waited any longer, people would think he mixed it or tampered with it. Coke and Pepsi are battling it out to be the official soft drink of Simon Cowell's new reality show, The X Factor, which debuts next fall. Coke snagged its American Idol deal for less than $10 million. Not this time. The bidding is in the $50 million to $100 million range. Michael, is this a big deal or a big whoop?
It's a big deal because everybody sees blood in the water with Idol and Simon Cowell moving to the X Factor. And NBC, just moments ago while we're on recording this live, NBC and Mark Burnett, the guy behind Survivor, just announced they're launching a new singing show in the spring called The Voice of Holland. And the switch, the twist on the format is that in the initial audition round, the judges keep their backs to the singers. And it's been a huge hit in Holland. And they're hoping to duplicate it in the U.S. So everybody wants a piece of the X Factor, thinks Idol is weak and vulnerable, doesn't think these two new guest judges are going to work out. So it's going to be a fascinating spring and fall.
Karen?
What, big deal. TV show gets sponsor?
Don't you mean big whoop?
Big whoop. You know, God, I keep screwing that up.
Ever since our European
not
friend.
That up.
Yeah. One listener email and now she...
No, I just can't get it right.
Now, what's this thing you've outlined here, Michael, in the show notes? Matt Cradle, this year's winner? I guess that's of X Factor in the UK.
Max Cardle is the big winner of the X Factor, and usually the winner of X Factor has the number one single at Christmas in the UK. But there's another. Last year, it was upended by Rage Against the Machine, which put out a song for charity. And now this year, people are doing a campaign called Cage Against the Machine, where they're trying to make the John Cage single 3 minutes and 33 seconds, or 333, become the number one single of the year. Now, 333 is an avant-garde composition in which the guy sits at the piano and does nothing for 3 minutes and 33 seconds. It's literally 3 minutes and 33 seconds of silence. And the idea that that might become the number one single of the UK in the Christmas season is awesome. It would raise money for charity. And I'd love to think of radio stations actually playing it and have 3 minutes and 33 seconds of silence. So it's just a very cool thing that's going on in the UK this year.
Well, let's stick with reality shows for a second. Think making a fashionable dress is hard? Try designing a great new handbag. That's the premise behind Project Runway Accessories, which takes the fashion designer concept and extends it to a show where fashionistas compete to create the best belts, handbags, scarves, and the like. Look for the show to air on Lifetime in late 2011 at the earliest. Karen, what's the most you've ever spent on a purse, and is this a big deal or a big whoop?
You're so sexist. I've only spent maybe $150 on a purse.
Oh my God.
And I still use it. In fact, I'm cycling through it right now. Big whoop.
Big whoop? What about you?
Show gets spinoff.
Show gets spinoff. We're going to have to like label all of our big whoop, big deal, big whoop entries. Michael, what do you think?
Don't be sexist. The most I ever spent on my messenger bag from Jack Spade was $175. So I won up Karen.
Your man purse? You mean your man?
In my man purse. My messenger bag, or my purse, as my brother calls it. I would say this is a big deal, just like designers who make their name in clothing and then they extend to other accessories and brands to make a lot of money. It makes sense that the show would do the same thing. So I think it's a smart extension of the Project Runway brand.
Speaking of extending brands, Justin Bieber trading cards? Yep, the teen idol always dreamed of being a hockey player and getting his own playing card. So he's really excited about this new product. Wait a second, how can a 16-year-old kid always have dreamed about anything? Anyway, Karen, is this a big deal or a big whoop?
What do you mean? He's got 16 years to dream. He's a 16-year-old. That doesn't mean he doesn't have dreams. The fact that he wants a trading card is just ridiculous.
So is it a big deal or a big whoop?
It's a big whoop, although I suppose I'm wrong that anything the Bieber does is a big deal.
He's now not Justin Bieber. He's the Bieber. Interesting. Michael,
he's a verb now, too. You can Bieber something.
Ooh,
whoa. Okay. I say it's a big deal in a negative sense because they are treating this kid like a flash in the pan novelty item. And they're going to burn him out where he could have a long, serious career. I think if you actually see him perform, you think, you know what? This guy has some talent and he's funny on camera.
Talented.
And
I
they're overkilling him to the ninth degree. And it's very bad for his long-term career.
Karen, reserve your tickets now because Cirque du Soleil is coming to the movies, baby, in 3D. Yes, the massively successful live entertainment brand Cirque du Soleil is making a performance/fiction film with director Andrew Adamson, who did the first two Shreks and the first two Narnia films. It combines a fictional storyline with Cirque highlights from their three shows in Vegas, using the 3D technology James Cameron developed to capture it all. Of course, Cameron is producing it. Michael, is this project a big deal or a big whoop?
I think it's a big deal. They're a massive draw worldwide, so there's no reason why a feature film shouldn't work too. Though I should have checked how many shows they have in Vegas. I'm not sure if it's exactly three or more or less than that.
It's more like 300. Actually,
yeah, it feels like it. But I think it's a big deal. But it's a weird mix, so it's definitely a roll of the dice, but it could be a big grosser.
Karen?
You know, this is the type of movie that I think belongs in 3D, so I'm okay with that.
Cool.
Whether I don't think this is necessarily a big deal, but I'm okay with it being in 3D, so they can proceed ahead.
I'm sorry, I don't know who you are, but can you put Karen back on the line? Newsweek better get ready for a cover story about Kim Kardashian. The venerable news magazine is merging with Tina Brown's website, The Daily Beast, and its idea of news is a photo gallery of top reality stars and how much money they made. Topping the list? Kim Kardashian with a $6 million haul. Also on the list is Lauren Conrad from The Hills, and The Situation, who makes his money peddling fitness DVDs, vodka for guys who like to get drunk and bulk up on protein at the same time, and other wares. Karen, is the amount of money you can make as a reality TV star a big deal or a big whoop?
You know, I think this is a big deal. It feels like it shouldn't be because reality has been such a large part of television for so long, but the fact that such nobodies can make such large amounts of money really sort of scares me.
Michael?
I had sort of the opposite reaction. I feel like it's a big whoop because I'm surprised about how little they're making. I mean, TV stars would scoff at a $3 million payday. You know, you got a hit TV show on a sitcom or drama, you're going to make a lot more than $3 million when all is said and done. So
But these people have no talent, Michael. That's what disturbs me.
That's true.
you want to hear a disturbing story? This week, I had a meeting over in Beverly Hills, your neck of the woods, Karen. And as I'm pulling up, I notice this big crowd gathered outside a store. It's kind of like a jewelry upscale gift shop. And I thought, oh, they must be filming something in there. I parked the car and I come up from the parking garage and the The crowd is right outside the parking garage, still staring into this store. And I turned to somebody and I said, "What's going on here? What are they shooting inside?" And the guy turns to me and says, "Oh, nothing. One of the Kardashians is in there."
See, that is
and
frightening.
I then looked and there's paparazzi and I guess the public with little camera phones and point and shoots. And I really just wanted to go, "Listen, all of you, your license to be human has been revoked. You're going to have to leave the planet."
That's the most depressing thing I've heard all day.
Like, that's what disturbs me is that we as a society care about stuff like that. I find really alarming.
It's very depressing, but there have always been, you know, fake celebrities, for lack of a better term, from crime, you know, from being involved in some crime or scandal or whatever. You know, they'd be on the vaudeville stage back in the 1800s, so it's nothing new.
In the tradition of Anchors Away and Who Framed Roger Rabbit, which both combine live actors with animation, DreamWorks is producing Me and My Shadow, a 2013 release that combines animation and animation. Yes, the movie presents a quote-unquote real world in computer-generated CGI and a quote-unquote shadow world in hand-drawn animation. Karen, is the clever combo a big deal or a big whoop?
You know how I feel about this. Why are you asking me? It's a cartoon.
Good point, Michael.
I think it's a big whoop as far as the combination of animation, but it is kind of an interesting film premise. It's about the story of Shadow Stan, an incredibly frustrated shadow that yearns for a more dynamic life, but happens to be stuck with Stanley Grubb, the world's most boring human. Eventually pushed to the brink, Shadow Stan breaks the singular rule of the shadow world. They lead, we follow, and takes control of Stanley. So I have to admit, it's a kind of an interesting premise.
Hey, have you heard that new app? I love that song. Well, that's not quite the future, but artist Secondhand Serenade, who I've never heard before, is trying to break his new single, You and I, by making it available for 3 days on the SoundHound app. SoundHound is the app that helps you identify songs, and Secondhand Serenade hopes his placement there will help fans identify his music as worth checking out. Michael, big deal or big whoop?
It's a big whoop. He's not a big artist. He's a guy who hasn't quite broken into the top 40 yet, but it's a smart move to try and get your music out in any way possible.
But, you know, again, similar to what we talked about with the Gorillaz, this would have been a big deal 2 years ago, 1 year ago. Now it seems dated.
Well, I think it'd be a bigger deal if it was, you know, Madonna or Gorillaz, but the fact that it's a guy who hasn't really broken yet is why I think it's not such an important breakthrough.
But isn't that why he's put himself on SoundHound?
Right, but that's why a new artist might give away their music when a top-selling artist does it, or, you know, that's why I think it's newsworthy.
So you don't think that mobile platforms becoming a way to release music and a way to create an event behind music, musical...
Malarkey,
okay.
See, I disagree. I think that's interesting, but I think it was more interesting a year ago.
But don't you think it's just one of 18, you know, you get your song on a commercial, you get your song posted on iTunes, you get your song posted on Amazon's homepage, you get it
if someone wants to put it on their blog or
YouTube, you put it anywhere you can. Why not? Of course. But a SoundHound app isn't any more or less innovative or interesting than any other way.
That's what I'm saying. We're agreeing. To me, it's not a big deal. It would have been a much bigger deal a year or two ago when not as many people were doing it, when you didn't have as many options.
Kara Sedgwick and her fans will have to say goodbye to that crazy Southern accent. TNT just announced that the hit series The Closer will end its run after the seventh and final season in 2011. Sedgwick herself decided the crime drama had run its course and it was time to call it quits. Karen, is this a big deal or a big whoop?
Well, I mean, it's sort of a big whoop. You know, show gets canceled, but this was a hit show and it was good for her career, so it's sort of sad.
I think it's a big deal. The show is still a big hit. It still gets like 8 million viewers. It would be a good size hit even on network TV. And so for basic cable, it's still right on top. And she's, you know, saying goodbye on top and not letting the show struggle or, you know, whimper out. So it's a big deal.
Is that why they canceled it when they did?
No, they didn't. It's still a hit. I think she's just saying you've done it for 7 years. It's time to move on.
So she could keep doing it commercially. She didn't want to move on.
No, she's the one who called it. She's the one who called it a day. Kara Sedgwick is the one who called it a day. Commercially, she could keep going for years. It's not even close to not being profitable. It's doing great still.
Wesley Snipes, the Blade Trilogy actor, entered McKean Federal Correctional Institute in Lewis Run, Pennsylvania, shortly before noon on Thursday to begin his 3-year sentence for failing to file his taxes for three or 4 years, right? He was convicted in 2008 for three misdemeanor counts of willful failure to file income taxes and spent 2 years unsuccessfully trying to appeal the ruling. Karen, big deal or big whoop?
Well, this is a really big deal, and I'm actually sort of surprised that it came to him having to do prison time. But hey, Wesley, just because you're a movie star, that doesn't mean that you don't have to pay your taxes.
Michael?
Right, right. They got Al Capone. They're going to get you. He was arguing that it's unconstitutional to have to pay income taxes, but there's no real tax lawyer that will tell you that's so. So, you know, he was being foolish, and unfortunately, he's having to pay the price.
Just ask Thoreau.
But that was more of an act of civil disobedience, but nice reference.
The Queen of Soul, Aretha Franklin, is battling pancreatic cancer. The Detroit News has learned from three sources close to the singer's friends and family about her illness. Franklin was the first woman inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and has earned 18 Grammys in her storied career. Michael, is this a big deal or a big whoop?
Well, I mean, she's a legend in music. It's a big deal that she's fighting illness, but she's getting on in years. It's a shame to see, and hopefully she'll get better.
Karen?
Yeah, I agree. It's very sad.
By the way, I love Thoreau's blog, Walden. I thought that was a great blog. I love that.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that was a book, but, you know.
Oh.
Just, okay. You know, a little before the time of the internet there. Well, that concludes Big Deal or Big Whoop and brings us right along into Inside Baseball, our weekly segment where we discuss the news stories that only people in Hollywood might care about. This week, we've got a number of stories, so sit tight and we'll go through them as fast as we can, starting with the Directors Guild of America approving a tentative deal with studios. This is actually quite big news. A couple of weeks ago, SAG and AFTRA reached a deal with studios for 3 years. And this new deal is not exactly the same, but it's fairly similar to what the actors agreed to, a 2% annual wage increase and a one-time 1.5% increase in employer contributions to the pension and health plans, which will now equal about 15.5%. And what I loved, they had a little shift from first class air travel to new rules favoring business class and coach.
And coach.
Ouch.
I want to know who gets coach. That's what I want to know. Like, how low do you have to be on the director totem pole to not rank?
My coach.
So
you Hollywood highfalutin people. There's nothing wrong with coach. I've never run in first class.
No, I never have either. And honestly, it's probably the really, like, the people who are part of the DGA, but you can't really figure out how they managed to get themselves into the DGA. Those are the people who fly coach.
I mean, but what a waste of money.
Steven
that is,
Spielberg's
too.
Not flying coach.
Yeah.
He flies on his private jet.
So
what I want to know is that this is the deal we sort of expected. SAGs and AFTRA set the standard and DGAs followed in suit. We're now waiting for the Writers Guild. And there's some claim that they may be trying to pressure in this sort of the new media areas that other people have sort of folded on and say, well, we'll wait down the road to see about how we can get more money from streaming video and all that sort of stuff. But the WGA also identified an area of priority, which they call the deteriorating pitching process, meaning when you go in and pitch a movie or pitch a TV show or pitch an idea. What is the deteriorating pitching process? Do either of you know?
What else do you got?
I know what the process is, but what do they mean by a deteriorating process, and what could it possibly be dealt with in contract negotiations?
I think what they're talking about is that writers aren't invited to come in and pitch story ideas anymore, and that's kind of the old-fashioned way of doing it. Hey, I have a story idea. Great, come in, pitch it. Oh, gee, that sounds great. Write it.
How is it done now?
They've developed a lot different. Well, first of all, a lot of them are like, hey, let's make Spider-Man 18. And
pretty
let's
much.
Just hire, you know, a well-known writer to do it. So it's not giving kind of struggling writers the face time that they used to have.
What could they ask for in contract negotiations to change that? What could they say? You must meet with writers?
We should actually try and get somebody from the WGA to explain that. That would I'll look into that, and hopefully on a future episode we'll have somebody explain what a deteriorating pitching process actually means.
Yeah. Well, maybe we'll read about it in IndieWire.
Well, yes, and this we can kind of go over really quickly. We mentioned a couple of weeks back that Eugene Hernandez, who co-founded IndieWire and was its editor for 15 years, was leaving, and he was headed over to the Lincoln Center Film Society to be their head of digital strategies. He left after 15 years, and it looks like they found a new editor. Dana Harris will be IndieWire's new editor-in-chief. She's going to work out of Los Angeles, not New York, where IndieWire is based. That's what was a little surprising to me. But she's got a very good background. She was the managing editor of the Independent Film and Video Monthly in New York, and she's worked at The Hollywood Reporter and was the editor of Variety's website for 3 years, starting in 2000. And I saw her at a conference just recently, and she was, I guess, head of strategic plans there or strategic projects. I don't at Variety, I don't know. But Variety lost two key executives or journalists last week. Pamela McClintock is also leaving Variety for The Hollywood Reporter.
Yeah, The Hollywood Reporter is really doing well. I mean, I know there are people who don't agree with the direction they're taking, but Variety is just hemorrhaging people and hemorrhaging money, from what I understand, too.
Well, you know, and I don't think there's any big deal about her being in L.A. These days, electronically, there's just no need to be in the same room or same city. You shouldn't even have to leave your home to work on a website.
Yeah, and I don't, as a matter of fact.
And, yeah, me either.
Ann Thompson, of course, Thompson on Hollywood over at IndieWire, who is, you know, editor at large now, she said that Dana Harris had the three qualities that they were looking for. The new editor-in-chief needed to have journalism chops and credibility. He or she needed to share the IndieWire mission for building and supporting the independent film community, and they needed to be an expert and forward-thinking about online publishing. And indeed, Dana Harris has all of those things. More hiring news over at Sony, although it's not really hiring; it's more like a continuation. Amy Pascal will be around Sony for another 5 more years.
Are we happy about that? Do you guys like her work?
We are very happy about that.
According to Karen, we are extremely happy about that.
I'm happy about it.
She's obviously well known for the Spider-Man, helping to make the Spider-Man franchise happen, the reboot of the James Bond franchise, and upcoming movies she has in the works for next year include The Smurfs, The Green Hornet, the English language remake of The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. So she's been there for 20 years. She worked her way up through the ranks, and she delivers. She's got a big relationship with Will Smith, who's still one of the most successful actors in the world. So she's a big player in Hollywood.
Well, and she did kind of leave Sony or Columbia Pictures for a little while in the 90s to run Turner, when Turner Pictures was going to kind of get into movies. But she returned and is now co-chairman with Michael Lynton.
Yeah, and like you said, they've had a great track record, and she's supposed to be a good person. And I don't know her, but from my way of looking at things, she represents what I think a studio exec should be.
Well, speaking of studios, we're going to touch on Lionsgate just a bit. It turns out a court in New York denied his preliminary injunction to block Lionsgate's second largest shareholder, Mark Rucheski, from voting shares he received in a controversial debt-for-equity swap back in July. And we kind of mentioned it back in July that to lower Carl Icahn's, this activist investor's, share of the company, the studio swapped some of its debt for shares in the company, which...
I know, this is really boring stuff, really.
But it's kind of important. I mean, Carl Icahn has been making a play for Lionsgate now for over a year. It's been tying up the company.
But yeah, but can you try and explain things and not talk about debt swap and stuff? Basically, he wanted to do something and he got pushed back by the courts, who said, nope, nice try.
Right, and tomorrow...
So this is a real plus, because we don't like Icahn, because he sounds like kind of asshole.
Well, he did start a website called Save Lionsgate, in which he's imploring Lionsgate shareholders to vote for his board of directors rather than the board of directors that the company is putting together.
By the way, I like that he started a website. See, I would have started a Facebook page and a Twitter, but that's just me. I mean, who does he want to get behind this?
It's a ridiculous thing for him to do.
And that's totally bizarre, right? Why would you create a static website and what, try and get people to go there? I don't understand.
Well, you know, in the end, it's just taking up a lot of time for Lionsgate and certainly a lot of money. So hopefully we won't have to be talking about it anymore very soon. And something that I know, Karen, you wanted to talk about is Jim Osborne, who used to be an agent at ICM and then moved over to Paradigm. And then last week, what happened?
He lost Hayden Christensen and...
He lost him? Where did he lose him? Like in the forest or...
Oh, Hayden Christensen left Paradigm, went to UTA. And Jim Osborne gave an interview to Nikki Fink where he gave all the reasons of why it was not a bad thing for Hayden Christensen to have left. And I think you've got the actual quote here somewhere, but I recall it him saying, you know, he wouldn't read and he refused to leave his ranch in Canada, and I'm sorry, but if you want to actually work in the United States, hanging in your ranch, ain't gonna cut it.
I mean, well, here's the quote given to Nikki Fink, who is the editor-in-chief of Deadline Hollywood, about Hayden Christensen, the actor who is probably best known for starring in the Star Wars prequels. And this is a quote from Jim Osborne, his former agent. quote, he wouldn't read for Clint Eastwood's Hereafter. He passed on Afterlife opposite Liam Neeson. He passed on Cherry opposite Michelle Pfeiffer. It is so competitive for young actors right now that sitting on a farm in Toronto is not going to get him a job.
That's what it was. But see, here's what I find this amusing and appalling at the same time. Like on one aspect, having worked in the management business and worked in the agency business, oh my God, Jim Osborne said something we have all wanted to say.
Oh, that
you know?
Is so true.
And you have to give him kudos for that, you know, for actually saying the truth. But on the other hand, like, what are you thinking?
Like, yeah, do
why
not.
Why do you say that to Nikki Fink and not expect to be fired?
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah, do not put your client down in public.
But if we had a third hand, I would say, on the other hand, look at the movies Hayden Christensen turned down. Hereafter.
No, he's right.
Flop.
That's what I'm saying. No, Jim Osborne is right.
No. He's not right. Hayden Christensen's right. All these movies are dogs. He shouldn't have made these movies.
Afterlife wasn't a dog.
Afterlife? I don't even know what it is. It didn't make money.
Wasn't that the action thriller that was a surprise hit?
No, you're talking about Taken.
Yes.
No. Yeah, no. Afterlife,
Taken, that's what UTA did to Hayden Christensen.
Yeah, no, Afterlife is this movie that came and went with Hayden Christensen, I mean, with Christina Ricci, Liam Neeson, and Justin Long that came and went and did nothing, no business,
okay,
after
but,
Dot
but,
Life.
But you're giving that kind of advice in hindsight. If you look at this, okay, we're talking about a Clint Eastwood movie. We're talking about a movie co-starring Liam Neeson. We're talking about a movie co-starring Michelle Pfeiffer. I mean,
but what matters is the
script.
And
then you look at Hayden Christensen, who has absolutely no career. Why is he in any position to be turning down an opportunity to go up for these movies?
Hayden Christensen,
don't tell me that Hayden Christensen knows something that we don't, because I can guarantee you he doesn't.
Well, he needs help and he needs to reboot his career, but I don't think any of those movies were going to do it.
Well, and now UTA, the United Talent Agency, will actually be helping him reboot his career. Not in the Spider-Man reboot, however, because that role went to Andrew Garfield. Complete non sequitur. We do have some listener email sent to dirt@showbizsandbox.com. Michael, do you want to read it?
I do. Hello, mates. No, actually, she says, hey, kids. Allison, the assistant camera operator here, writing in with a bit of a correction. On episode 81, you reported that Peter Jackson would be shooting The Hobbit in 3D and stated production would be the first to use Red's new Epic digital cameras. However, based on a recent posting in the Red user forums, it turns out the Spider-Man reboot began filming with the cameras last week. Cinematographer John Schwartzman seems to be really impressed by the new cameras and even provided some technical information about his shooting setup. Here's a link to a story on his post. Really look forward to the show each week. Keep up the good work. Allison, the assistant camera operator, Sydney, Australia.
Dude, that's so cool.
What's cool? That
somebody in Australia is listening to us.
Yeah. We have listeners all over the world, Karen. Remember when I keep saying we have a worldwide audience?
I know. I just don't believe you until we get listener email.
Okay. Well, and if you want to send listener email in, you can do so. dirt@showbizsandbox is the address to send it to. Again, that's dirt@showbizsandbox.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail. The number to call is 888-567-SAND. That's 888-567-7263. You can find all of that information as well as ways to subscribe to the show. You can subscribe in iTunes or the Zune Marketplace or in your RSS reader. You can find those links on our website, showbizsandbox.com. That's where you'll find links to all of the stories we've discussed in today's podcast, as well as links to all of our social networking accounts like Twitter and Facebook and all the ones Karen helped set up. The music that you hear at the beginning and end of each show is by MGMT, the popular indie rock group. They can be found on their website, whoismgmt.com, or on MySpace. Karen has a website, karenwoodwardonline.com. She's also on Twitter. @Karen_Woodward is the username to look up. Michael Giltz's username on Twitter is @MichaelGiltz. His website is michaelgiltz.com. My Twitter username is @Sperling, and you can find some of my writing on celluloidjunkie.com. Until next week, play nice.